KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. You know my guest, Josh Radner, is a man who's had the longest pursuit of a mate in television history on How I Met Your Mother. But as a romantic anthropologist, he's also gone off on his own in his directorial writing debut, Happy Thank You More Please, which played Sundance last year and won the Audience Award. They're a terrific film. He's here with me. Josh, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
One of the things in How I Met Your Mother, I think one of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen, when you and Lindsay Sloan get back together, you basically have dated so many people in New York that you're back to somebody you dated years before.
Right.
And it was not only a really well-written episode, but a great performance.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, I just thought that sort of thing of you basically being both hopeful and rueful at the same time was a really tough thing to pull off.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing thing to be, we're in season 7 now, so to be staying with a character for that long, you kind of, in the pilot, you have the DNA for a character, and then as a series goes, they kind of riff on it and deepen it, shade it, and different things start emerging. So I think something that's really interesting happening with that character is the edges are getting frayed a little bit. I mean, he's still this romantic, but he's also getting really dark and really sad.
It's almost like this thing now where it's almost kind of existential, where he's pursuing this thing whether he gets it or not.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like he's been in the race so long he can't quit or something.
We should ask you at this point to explain a little bit what this show is about for those who, there must be a couple of folks who haven't seen it.
It's got this, you know, slightly awkward title that now I don't think anyone thinks about. But when the show first came on, they were like, what a weird title. It takes place, or the framing device is set in the future, or just the framing device is in like 2030, 2035. An older father is telling his teenage children the story of how he met their mother. So he says, you know, way back in 2005, a simpler time. And that's when the show premieres. So it's a story that takes place now, but it's with the kind of perspective of this older man looking back and telling his children all the crazy events that led up to him meeting their mother.
And it's interesting, too, because I really know you as a stage actor. I see you mostly in dramatic stuff on television. You work with some really interesting people, Miguel Sandoval and Sally Field. That was an amazing cast, that show that you did with them.
Three episodes. They aired it for 3 episodes and yanked it. The Court, it was one of the first things I ever did on TV. And Christina Hendricks was in that show, Sally Field. Hill Harper. I mean, it's just an incredible group of people. And but it was kind of, you know, we shot for 3 months and it was like this on-camera class for me. And to get up, you know, Pat Carroll was on that show to watch these people be in front of the camera. And I remember thinking, I didn't know how small you could be or how softly you could talk. You know, just even being mic'd after so many years of doing theater.
Sure.
Just readjusting the scale of performance. And I got really excited by the possibilities in that. It didn't feel like I was subtracting anything. It felt like, I can do a lot less, and it will translate more. That was an exciting time.
But it was a really interesting, because it almost felt like what you must have been like as an actor. It was a very watchful performance in The Court.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It's so funny that I didn't think anyone saw that, even the people who made it. It was like, this is fantastic.
It was kind of a big deal. They got like this big send-off.
Yeah, and we shot 6 and they canceled it after 3. I mean, that's why anytime you do anything in TV, there's always just, you know, there's always this kind of cautious optimism. But at the same time, you know, you never know. Because I always thought everything I was doing was like, this is the one. This is going to go. You know, right before I did How I Met Your Mother, I did a pilot with Rob Reiner and Mercedes Rule for NBC. And I was this is going to go. It was called Everyday Life. It was about a family of therapists that all lived together in a brownstone and had their offices next to each other. And it was all improvised. And it was just this very neurotic, funny New York thing that I was sure was going to happen. And it didn't. So then when How I Met Your Mother came around, it was, you know, we were all kind of in our own little ways, like these kind of battle-scarred veterans. You know, we'd had every possible thing happen in television that could happen. You know, hits, flops, cancellations, firings, everything. So when we got together, there was just this feeling like, this might be the one. I mean, it felt really good right away.
Well, it feels like the show's really been building towards, I mean, because it's this thing where it's that thing that comedy's become in the 21st century. It's both sitcom, but it's also this ongoing story
yeah.
that demands a lot of attention and a lot of emotional investment from the audience.
I think, and it demands some real emotional investment from us. I always thought of Ted as like this independent film character trapped in a sitcom. You know, he's a little more earnest. I mean, he's gotten, they've really written him. When he's goofy, he's supremely goofy, but it's one of the few, especially multi-camera sitcoms, it feels like it's exploded the form a bit, and it's allowed us to do things that other people on a multi-camera show wouldn't be able to get away with. Somehow the emotional container of the thing is pretty big.
It's a treatment. I'm talking to math genius and Paul Newman, acting award winner. Josh Radnor, he's the star of How I Met Your Mother. He also did a terrific movie called Happy Thank You More, Please. But one of the things I find really fascinating about the show is that as it's gone on, we get a chance to sort of really see the way you give Ted this kind of intellectual vanity.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things that I both love and kind of cringe about because I'm close with the writers, Carter Bays and Craig Thomas, and I think they always take little things about people's personality and kind of inflate them or you know, I always kind of have a book with me or, you know, I don't correct people's grammar that much. But, you know, I think they thought it would be a really funny thing. See, but, it's also this thing that slightly amuses and annoys me about the show is this notion of that they'll celebrate Ted's smarts and then they'll beat him up for it. They'll celebrate his romanticism and then slap him in the face for it. So it kind of tries to have it both ways. And I think it does that successfully.
Isn't that a way a little bit to break him out of being such a straight man?
I think so.
Otherwise he is that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And lately I feel like I've kind of embraced that more and kind of said yes to that. And,
how do you mean?
I think because it was the one thing that if people knew me at all, they knew me for this. And so it's this kind of thing where you're in people's living rooms and you're this character and people assume that's you. So I think one of the blessings of this show, one of the many reasons I feel incredibly blessed by the show is that it made me kind of professionally restless to do something else. And so that's why I started, you know, writing and directing movies because it felt, the way I describe series television to people is I say, it's like you go to a gym every single day, but you're only allowed to work out your right arm. So that arm is stacked, like this one skill set is just stacked, right? And then the rest of you is kind of atrophying. What I get to do on that show is actually more, I think, than I get to do on many other shows. But at the same time, there's tons of other things that I don't get to do. So to have the ability to go in and work out my right arm there and then make these films and work out the rest of me feels like this. I've struck this great balance. There is this feeling, you know, when people come up to you and you know, call you by your character's name, it's kind of like, you know, you want to really introduce yourself, to bring some distance to that relationship because it's such an intimate relationship to be on TV, and people have a ferociously passionate response to the show.
But again, people, because of that investment that you have to make in the show, once you start to follow it, I think you get that kind of thing that probably soap opera people tend to get. You know, where people are really connected to it.
I mean, people, you know, almost grabbing you by the collars, like, "Who's the mother?" Like, really. But I always think, well, that's something. I mean, they're invested. I always think, and maybe this is the optimist's reading of it. I always think, they care about this guy. They want him to land on his feet. They want him to be okay.
It's the treat. We're talking metaphorical vascularity with Josh Radnor. He's the star of How I Met Your Mother. But his movie Happy Thank You More, Please played Sundance in 2010, won the audience award there. And it's, as we were saying before we got started, it's another ensemble piece. Clearly that's a huge interest in you and just sort of strike a kind of balance where people are defined by the way they live in groups.
Mm-hmm. You know, communities and families are different than they were, I don't know, a generation ago even. So, you know, How I Met Your Mother is a family show. It's about a family. It's about a makeshift family.
But also
this
people
new
who,
movie,
who are hungry for families outside this makeshift family that they have.
Right. But I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if that's just a kind of learned thing.
Really?
Well, Ted, certainly, he has some very cliched ideas about, you know, what family would look like. He has ideas of what the house is supposed to look like, what the dog's supposed to look like, what the wife is supposed to look
he
like.
Has, he has these sort of projections about everything.
Yeah, but he's getting disabused of a lot of those, which I think is really interesting to watch. But with the movie also, with Happy Thank You More, Please, it's also riffing on this notion of community as family. And And in urban environments, it feels, because you kind of keep your eyes down and don't really make eye contact with people, there's this hunger, I think, for even more connection.
I thought of it a bit in the way that sort of makes it similar to How I Met Your Mother, in that you have a lot of people who are transplanted from other places,
right,
who feel like they have to make family because they're so far away from their own families.
Right. No, I think there's a lot of that. And, you know, one of the things I was trying to do with Happy Thank You More Please is to make a kind of proudly uncynical film. I really feel like cynicism is this great scourge, you know, it's this great kind of villain of our time. This idea that you can be, you know, folded armed and away from everything. I think it's a fiction. I think if you're alive and you have a nervous system, you're contributing on some level. So I'm always asking myself, well, what do I want to contribute? You know, and especially as a filmmaker, like what do I want to put out there? Because I don't know, I feel like it's a great opportunity to make a movie, you know, no matter how many people see it. Like, movies have really affected me in my life. They've given me a different idea of what I could be, what I can do, different possibilities. You know, I'm not a fan of horror films because they make me feel not so good, you know? So I want to make a movie that makes me feel, or I want to watch a movie. And that's what I was trying to do with this movie, was make a movie I would really want to watch, and a movie that was about transformation and people growing up and getting out of their own way.
But it's also this interesting balance of comedy and pathos. I mean, mm-hmm. That's a lot to take on.
Yeah, but I think that's just what strikes me as interesting. Like, I don't think life is all funny, and I don't think life is all sad. It's all those things, you know?
But that's a tough thing to do in the movie, you know what I'm talking about?
Because yeah,
movies that try to do that either end up doing one or the other in alternation.
Right.
And you were clearly out to do both.
Right. Well, it's kind of a natural thing I do. I think I do it in conversation. Like, if we're getting a little heavy, it's like, oh, time for a joke. You know, and I do it in my writing, too. Like, if there's a scene that is largely funny, I like to end it on a slightly dissonant note or something.
But if you're doing that to sort of make a joke, you can't do it in a movie because you're cheapening the drama in the scene if you're doing that, aren't you? You're basically sort of saying, this doesn't really matter. It's got to be that again, striking that balance.
Well, I also find, though, that when people are in very extreme situations, jokes happen. I mean, you know, like, discomfort leads to all sorts of funny things. And sometimes it's just the truth of that moment leading to that. My friend Trent told me this. It's a Lakota word called heyoka, which is, I think it refers to this notion of a sacred clown, and this notion of the sanctity of silliness. And what they talk about in ceremonies, in these Native American ceremonies, when they're talking about the heyoka, is if there's too much silliness, time to bring in the sacred. But if there's too much sacred, it's time for a little silliness. And that's what this kind of sacred clown, the purpose is, to strike this balance between silliness and sacredness. And I always like this as a guiding principle for making the kind of movies I want to make.
But that's kind of what you were doing on stage in The Graduate. I mean, it felt like you ended up getting this part on stage that gave you a chance to do these things, the sort of the sacred and the silly.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny when someone says, oh, you know, I had someone tell me that they... it was a photographer, actually, and he said, oh, I read some stuff about you, and it seems like you're a really serious guy. And whenever anyone says, I am something, I immediately go, no, I'm not. Or, you know, I'm also this. You know, like, it feels like you're being reduced somehow when people say you're... Or if they say, you're funny, you know, you're like, no, I'm not. Like, I just feel like I'm lots of things depending upon the moment, and I guess I want my movies or even the parts I play to reflect the kind of complexity that I imagine myself to have, which maybe is not nearly as complex as I think it is. But, you know, yeah, it's that sort of thing.
We'll take a break. Josh Radnor is not funny. He's the star of How I Met Your Mother and the writer-director of Happy Thank You More Please. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Ever wish you could hear KCRW's signature music programming wherever and whenever you want? You can with Eclectic 24. Our ever-expanding all-music stream is available worldwide 24/7 online. You can listen to KCRW's diverse music mix on the go or in the car through your iPhone or Android phone app. KCRW's Eclectic 24, where and when you want it. Check it out. Go to kcrw.com/eclectic24.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest, who is vast, he contains multitudes.
How dare you?
Exactly. How dare I define you as something bigger than what you are? It's Josh Radner. He's the star of How I Met Your Mother, also the writer-director, and one of the stars of Happy Thank You More, Please. I mean, clearly what you're interested in is looking for a way to subvert people's expectations. It's almost a reflex for you. Mm. Where does that come from? How far back does that go? I mean, is it something you felt inspired by movies and that moved you to stage?
Well, I, as a fan of different actors, it's always great fun to see someone absolutely surprise you, you know? Because a lot of times movie actors, even television actors, you build upon your persona or you have a kind of, you know, this is movie star version of so-and-so. And it's always fun to see them flip that on its head. And I've always admired directors who would write, you know, like what Paul Thomas Anderson giving Tom Cruise that part in Magnolia or something that really makes us look at an actor in a different way. So on some level, with all the actors in Happy Thank You More, Please, and they were people that I knew and also knew could do something really great. Tony Hale, I think, is a great example of that, who played Buster on Arrested Development. Who
you make kind of a romantic lead.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was just this amazing thing that I thought, how can I pull off that Tony Hale wins Malin Ackerman in a movie? Like, that just seemed really fascinating to me. And I always describe this part. He plays this character, Sam Number Two, because my character's name is Sam. So Annie, the part Malin plays, she calls him Sam Number Two. I described him as this person who journeys from a character actor to a leading man right in front of your eyes throughout the course of the movie. And when Tony first shows up, you can hear it. You can hear when there are Arrested Development fans in the audience. They kind of laugh or applaud. And they're like, oh, there's Buster. And then he does come across as a version of Buster, like kind of the office version of Buster. And then through the course of the movie, you realize, oh, he's the most evolved, kind of awake character in the movie. He's the most mature. He's the least neurotic character. He's the one who really knows what he wants, and he goes after it.
And he's also the one who knows himself, because everybody else wants to have somebody else tell them what they are.
Exactly. Everyone has an idea of happiness that is external.
Yeah, they're also looking to be reflected in somebody
totally,
else's eyes.
Totally. And I think that's a very common romantic folly, you know, this idea that if I could get someone to love me, then I'm all these things.
I think one of the things that's fun about that movie, too, is with the exception of Tony, how fast, and the boy, of course, how fast everybody talks. So this need to sort of explain themselves before somebody asks them who they are. Mm. They want to plant this flag and say, this is who I am. There's that constant need to sort of exclaim this thing.
That's where I am all over the movie. I was telling you, I was just in Singapore for the Singapore Film Festival, and I watched the movie, and I hadn't watched it in a while, so I had some real distance from it. And there was this feeling of like slight cringy embarrassment, that this feeling that my guts were all over that movie. You know, that like, oh, I'm in all of these characters.
Which you hadn't had for a while. Cause...
Well, no, I mean, I knew it was a deeply personal movie, and people have said that they feel like they know me better after seeing that movie.
Really?
But there, I wasn't aware of how exposed I was in that movie. And I think one of the things, I actually gave someone a direction in an audition for my new movie that I'm editing now, that I said, all my characters talk until they land on exactly what they mean to say and how they mean to say it. So they'll talk until they get there, and they'll double back on themselves and say, no, that's not really, you know, and they're always kind of looking to hit the right word that plucks that chord of, ah, yes, this is it. This is what I meant to say. And I think that's something I do. I mean, really, 20% of what I'm saying here is what I mean to be saying. I'm just talking until I find it.
My guest is the indefinable Josh Radner, who's the star of How I Met Your Mother, also one of the stars and the writer-director of Happy Thank You More, Please. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. But that's almost a farce thing, that thing you're talking about, where people constantly sort of talking, you know? And weirdly, almost everybody in Happy Thank You More, Please gets an entrance, you know, they kind of come in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I almost wondered if you thought about it in theatrical terms in that way.
I'm still learning how to be a filmmaker, because a lot of what I was doing in that first movie was writing from a place of having digested a lot of film vocabulary just from being a watcher of movies, I didn't go to film school. I went to acting school. So as an actor, I'm trying to write parts that I feel like actors will have just a great time sinking their teeth into. You know, there's this scene where Sam in Mississippi, she wants to leave his apartment. She doesn't want to stay with him anymore. And I wrote this whole scene that was kind of an argument. And then I remembered, oh, she has his keys. So I just started writing. She tosses him the keys, and then he tosses them back. And then she tosses them back, and they start smiling at each other. And it became a scene about tossing keys back and forth, where there's very minimal dialogue. So that was me teaching myself how to be a filmmaker versus, well, I haven't written plays, but more of a theatrically based actor writing a movie. Always looking for like the visual moment over the talky moment. I'm still, my screenplays are still very talky, but I'm learning more and more how to, what's the difference between film and theater?
What, how do you define that difference for yourself?
Well, I like the transportability of film. You know, this idea that you can just hop, you know, time, place. You can move very fast. You can jump over ages, you know, years back, you know, you can scramble at nonlinear. You can do a lot of those things in theater, but...
But you can do them in a much more realistic way. You're not suggesting it the way you do in theater.
Yeah. Although I love the theatricality of theater. One of the things I remember being incredibly floored by Angels in America when I saw it in New York when I was 19. And then I read it. And I love that Tony Kushner writes with the angel that it should be this incredibly theatrical moment, but we should be able to see the wires. You know, it's this kind of, there's a winking moment. Sometimes people will say something being too theatrical or too something, and I'll say, yeah, but it's a movie. Like we don't want a videotape life. That would just be boring. Like, you want to find the most dramatic theatrical moments. That's why we're gathering around the campfire to watch the thing.
Sure.
You know?
But, you know, also there's got to be that core believability. And I think when people say something's theatrical, they're saying they were thrown out of it. They didn't like.
Yeah.
And you got to find ways to incorporate that sense of, this is life or a depiction of life, but not that.
Right.
Is that something you're looking to do more with your second movie?
One of the things that's been really fascinating is to edit. I love editing. I love being in post. And
that's the real filmmaking, isn't it?
I love it. I just, you know, I was saying to another friend of mine who just directed something, said it's where your control freak can really run wild. You know, you understand why certain directors get these kind of God complex, because there is this feeling of creating a universe or... And especially as an actor, where you can feel so disempowered that, you know, you'll see a take and you'll say, well, I love the take, but I don't like the dialogue. Re-record the dialogue. You know, you can do so much to manage and massage things.
You must miss that part of acting where you're shaping a performance from beginning to end in front of an audience, because you're doing bits and pieces. As a director, you can certainly come in and impose your will.
Right.
And create something that maybe wasn't even there by taking that recorded bit and adding it on to the thing that's on film.
Right.
But as an actor, do you miss that sense of being on the stage and having it belong to you from beginning to end?
As an actor, my favorite thing is to be on stage. I still, you know, I started acting when I was 15 on stage, and I don't think I got in front of a camera until I was 25. So I had 10 years of solid stage only acting. And it was a really big transition to figure out, like we were talking about before, like how to be in front of the camera. It's a different scale of performance. There's something about when I get back on stage, I have such muscle memory about knowing how to fill a space or how little I have to do, how much I have to do. That's still very much in me.
It's the treatment, my guess, is the intensely curious Josh Radner. He's the star of How I Met Your Mother, writer, director, and one of the stars of Happy Thank You More, Please. A lot of words in everything he does. It's the treatment. You can also hear at KCRW.com. Talking about Bogosian, who's somebody who has characters speak almost to the point of losing oxygen. I mean, they fill spaces with words. And did you just click with that immediately? Because it's what you're talking about in the way you write, the mm-hmm. way people are defining themselves and redefining themselves before they finish the sentence.
Yeah. Well, I had some really good experiences with playwrights. I did a world premiere by John Robin Bates out here called The Paris Letter. And it was fascinating to me to watch writers come in with reams of new scenes and new dialogue and how ruthless they were about cutting things that were kind of working but not quite working. And to watch on TV the creators of my show, you know, the people who do my show, they're so ruthless with cutting things. And that's something as a writer you have to get over really quickly.
Because, I mean, as an actor, don't you sort of cling to a piece that works, but as a writer, director, you kind of think, well, no, we got to move on to the next thing. So how do you marry these two sides of that?
For the films, it's been, it's out of necessity. I've had to learn, you know, both rough assemblies of my movies were, the first one was 2 hours and 20 minutes. The second one was 2 hours and 13 minutes. And the final Happy Thank You More, Please is an hour 40. This new one right now is about an hour 45. So you're losing 45, you know, 35 to 45 minutes of shot and edited material. But it always seems like when you lose that material, the movie starts coming into focus. It's like chiseling a hunk of granite. You know, the thing just, the statue, the final image starts to emerge. And that's intensely satisfying, but you end up, I would say in both movies, I've ended up killing my favorite jokes.
Really?
You know? And my editor, Michael Miller, he worked, he was an editing assistant on Manhattan and Stardust Memories.
Yeah. Wow.
But he said that, you know, Woody Allen is just ruthless with, you know, he says, if they didn't know it was there, they won't miss it.
You should read When the Shooting Stops, the Cutting Begins, if you have not. It's by Ralph Rosenblum, who cut Annie Hall.
Okay.
And talks about how it went from being anhedonia, this one thing.
Right.
They basically threw it out and recut it. And that changed the way he edited the movies, because he just saw that you could do that.
Right.
If the joke didn't work, you just got rid of it.
Yeah.
And somebody who's really creative is kind of fearless about that.
Yeah.
But it kind of feels like, just between these playwrights you worked with, having Robbie Bates and then doing the show where things are sort of used, and if they don't work, they're jettisoned, kind of taught you to trust your abilities to just keep moving, I mean, to stay in motion.
Yeah, yeah. I also, I really liked school. I was very scared to leave school, because I went, you know, kindergarten up through grad school at NYU. I never took some time off before going to grad school or college. And I was very much in the habit of being a student. But there's something about maintaining, you know, it's like the Buddhist beginner's mind. I think you get into a dangerous place when you declare yourself an expert in something, because then you're you know, pride goeth before the fall. You know, you're about ready to have some sort of comeuppance. So I think one of the things I've really enjoyed over the last few years is being a novice, surrounding
being
myself
a student
with great,
again, basically.
Yeah, like surrounding myself with people who knew more than me. Michael Miller knows more about editing than I do, so I've learned from him. My cinematographer, Seamus Tierney, he knows a lot more about shooting movies than I do. My production designer, Jade Healy, these are people who just knew more than I did, and I wasn't afraid to ask them questions. I wasn't afraid to look stupid. And so by the time we got to the second film, these people all came back and worked on the second film with me. I really felt like, you know, we had this shorthand and I knew a little bit more, but I still, there's tons more to learn.
That's interesting, because you really are attracted to this by the idea of how the experience is going to be different and the way it's going to change you. Mm. I mean, you're looking for that thing that makes a difference from what you've done before.
Oh, yeah. But I also feel like I don't really make a distinction between my work life and my life life. What I mean is, it's not like I leave myself at home and go to the office. Like, I'm in all this stuff. You know, I'm writing very personal things. I'm bringing myself to it. And I want to grow from these experiences. I'd rather work less and work on more meaningful things than just keep working. I'm not super restless about, like, oh, I always have to be, you know, acting in something. I would rather, you know, take some time and travel and get inspired and write something and then come back and really throw myself into it. But I feel, especially now that I'm making these movies, it's really important to me to create a community. I feel like you're coming together to tell a story and create a world, and that should be super exciting and transformational. I don't think it has to be a slog. I think it should be fun. You know, making movies is fun. It's a great gift to be able to do this kind of thing.
I've had fun doing this for a lot of time. I hope you had a good time.
I did. Thanks.
Well, my pleasure. My guest is Josh Radnor. He's the star of How I Met Your Mother, also the star, director, and writer of Happy Thank You More Please, recording engineer, the mixer, and the editor. She does a lot of stuff, too. It's J.C. Swadek, produced by Harriet Ells. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I know nothing. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.